Ever feel like you suck at this job? Motherhood, I mean. Have too much anxiety and not enough patience? Too much yelling, not enough play? There's no manual, no village, no guarantees. The stakes are high. We want so badly to get it right. But this is survival mode. We're just trying to make it to bedtime. So if you're full of mom guilt, your temper scares you, you feel like you're screwing everything up, and you're afraid to admit any of those things out loud, this podcast is for you. This is Failing Motherhood. I'm Danielle Bettman, and each week we'll chat with a mom ready to be real, sharing her insecurities, her fears, her failures, and her wins. We do not have it all figured out. That's not the goal. The goal is to remind you, you are the mom your kids need. They need what you have, you are good enough, and you're not alone. I hope you pop in earbuds, somehow sneak away, and get ready to hear some hope from the trenches. You belong here, friend. We're so glad you're here. Hey, it's Danielle. Happy 2021, y'all. I took a break for the holidays, but I am back with Amelia Mora Mars, who has so much wisdom to share. But mostly, she has 10 kids. And if that's not a badge of honor, I don't know what is. When her mom was easily angered, she took on the role of the oldest, encouraging all of her siblings to comply to keep everyone safe. As she got older, she realized that she had created an emotional wall to protect herself, but it wouldn't serve her in motherhood. She speaks to needing to learn how to feel, how to be vulnerable, how to cry, or she would just be numb inside. If you resonate with that feeling of mothering without a good example of how to do this, you will find so much solace and gems in this episode. Also, if any part of your New Year's intentions or just plain pandemic burnout has you really noticing how much you don't like who you've turned into as a mom, let's talk. I want to know if you are sick of yelling and you know your kids are sick of it too. And I want to know if you are committed to changing how you're showing up. I'm looking for 3 new families this month that are ready to create a solid foundation to parent from together. I want to help you extend your patience, rewire your parenting mindset, and write your family business plan. Send me a DM on Instagram with the word patience or book a no-obligation free call from the link in the show notes. Keep up all of your hard work. I'll see you on the other side. Welcome to Failing Motherhood. My name is Danielle Bettman, and on today's episode, I'm joined by Amelia Mora Mars. Amelia is a mom to 6 daughters and 4 sons, a psychotherapist, and founder of Mom Connections, where she coaches women raised by emotionally unavailable mothers. She empowers women to break the cycle, heal their hearts, and reclaim their lives. As a mom, she too had to learn to overcome these wounds caused by her own mother. Through her personal journey, she was able to forgive her mom and change the way that she mothered her own children. She supports moms to raise strong, confident daughters and to leave a lasting legacy of love for their children and generations to come. So amazing. Welcome, Amelia. I'm so honored to be chatting with you today.
Thank you so much. Great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, absolutely. Have you ever felt like you were failing motherhood?
I chuckle. Yes, with 10 children. But the truth is, I feel like I failed even before I started because I felt like I didn't know if I was even qualified, we'll say, just based on my own. So that part, you know, I brought a lot of fear into it, a lot of my own expectations into it. And having 10 children teaches you a lot about letting go and relaxing. And I certainly had to learn that.
Yeah. How did you go from unqualified to 10 kids?
Well, my husband and I joked because he would say that he wanted one child. And I thought, oh, that's ridiculous. How can you just have one? I couldn't, you know, being Latina and having, you know, tons of cousins and people, I just couldn't fathom one. And I said 0. So I wanted none. So 1 and 0, we joked, make 10. So I just, you know, I had this tremendous fear about being a mom and that could I be the kind of mom having not been modeled it. But then I realized that really my biggest fear was not that. My biggest fear was not doing something and being paralyzed in fear and not moving towards something that could, you know, could potentially bring me so much joy and so much healing and so much growth. And so mm-hmm. I kind of leaned into that more.
So what was more of your backstory? Who were you when you were, considering becoming a mom or not?
Well, I'm child number two. My parents are from Costa Rica. They came to this country. They had us. That's a whole story in itself. And I am the second born child, but I had the first born personality. And so my mom was very moody and she had a very volatile temper. And so I took the role of protecting the siblings. And so I would try to be as creative as possible because noise agitated her, disorder of any kind agitated her. So I'd say, okay, you take the bathroom, you take the kitchen, I'll do this, I'll put on the music. And I would try to motivate my siblings to get them to work in such a way to keep us safe. And so I grew up hiding behind academics, perfectionism, people pleasing, looking a certain way, being perceived a certain way, because really my goal was to self-protect and to keep people just thinking that that's who I was. I was social, so I would talk to people, but I would keep the focus on them so that they wouldn't ask too much about me. And that's just kind of how I survived. So I was more of an external person and I knew that, but I also knew that that guard and that brick wall was protecting me from hurt and further pain until I realized, well, there's a choice. I could choose to live that way or I could choose to put down my defenses and learn to live, you know, connected to myself.
Yeah, that's a big decision because I bet seemed really scary.
It was very scary. And I remember thinking, you know, this has served me to protect me, but it doesn't serve me as a mother because I need to learn how to feel and to have compassion and empathy. And so it was a decision that I had to make. I either will put it down and learn to be, you know, be vulnerable and learn to feel and cry all the different emotions, or I will just be kind of numb inside. And so that was the choice I had to make.
Yeah. And I'm sure you knew kids need feeling moms.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So what did first time motherhood look like for you?
Okay. That was very challenging because child number one was a very fussy, fussy baby. And so that kind of reinforced my fear that I had trouble connecting to her and calming her down. And she just was a very colicky, very fussy baby. And fast forward to later years, she was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. And she just is the boy. She's easily triggered. She's sensitive to stimuli. So that was my first experience, just trying to figure that out. And it reinforced my fears and maybe I don't do this, you know. And it really helped me with the second child who was a cuddler and completely different. But I thought, oh, okay.
They're not all like this.
Yes, exactly.
What were some of the things that really pushed you to get out of your comfort zone when you were becoming a mom?
Well, I recognize that children are little mirrors and they mirror back who we are and that who I am is how I show up as a parent. And I knew that I still had a lot of anger at that point and unforgiveness. And I was still focused on the external. I would recognize when I was doing my girls' hair and putting their little dresses on that I was doing to them what my mom did to me. And that we had to look at her way to make her look good. And I thought, oh, I'm doing the same thing. And that is not what I want to do. So just those different things that I was recognizing, parts of me that I didn't like, and that it was only me that could choose to change those.
Yeah. So what kind of work did you have to do?
I'm an avid book reader, so I just read a ton of books about boundaries because I realized I didn't have any. You know, when you're raised in a family where it's a harsh environment, you learn to hide and you don't know what it means to really own yourself and protect yourself because it wasn't modeled. So I really had to work on my own boundaries and learning to heal parts of me. But I knew, you know, I'd read so many books and I knew what I was avoiding was connection. And mm-hmm. so and as a young mom, I went and got a therapist and I started working with her and just continued to grow. And then, you know, when I did my own graduate studies, that kind of thing, I learned so much about attachment and that made a lot of sense to me. So I specialized in attachment and what was missing for me. And being able to look not just like at my mom as flawed or had a mental illness, but just really looking at the whole picture of generations. And her mother was, at the age of 17, forced to marry someone who was twice her age. And she had wanted to be a nun to serve God and her community. And she didn't have that opportunity. So she went on to have 18 children. And six died at various ages. So if you can imagine a young teenage girl with all these losses, on top of not wanting to be a mother and a wife, she had 12 surviving children. She was a very sickly woman. She had diabetes and asthma. You know, and back in those days in Central America, things were difficult. So she was a very, very angry woman, you know, and...
Understandably.
Yeah. And I wonder too, the way she's described too, if possibly she had a mental illness like my mother did, you know, that it kept showing up. So I had to learn to look multi-generational and just look at the patterns and understand that, wow. You know, I always say to women that mothers, we stand on a bridge. All of us do. And we're on the bridge. And to one side is the past of how we were raised. And on the other side is the future of our generations. And only we in the present can change those generations and make changes. There's no one else that can do the work. It's us. And mm-hmm. so I had to stand on that bridge and make some decisions about the way I looked about the past and what changes and choices I wanted to make to give different hopes and dreams and just a way of being safe for children in the future.
Yeah, that's a lot of pressure when you think about how much influence we have to create that bridge and to decide what goes on it and, you know, to do all of that work. So how do you shift a mom's mindset from being really intimidated by that idea to feeling empowered by that idea?
Well, I tell women all the time that she, the mother, is the most important, influential and impactful woman in her child's life. And she is their very first love. And so she's given a position of leadership. And so to embrace that role, I mean, it's amazing. I mean, there's leaders all over the world, but I think moms are the most important in the home. Mm-hmm. And so instead of fearing it, it's to think, what a privilege, what an honor am I given? Can it be scary? Sure. Can it be intimidating? Yes. But really in the end, it's just, a sacred place for us moms to impact our children and our future generations. So it's really a beautiful thing.
Yeah. So after you went to therapy and things, did everything just get 10 times easier and you moved on?
No. So I always tell moms that there's ingredients for growth. And one of them is the truth. And I had to realize the truth about me. And that was easy because I could be critical of myself, you know, perfectionistic and had that critical voice. The second one is tenderness. It's that grace. And I wasn't that good at that for myself and compassionate. So we need the balance. If we truth someone to death, they're going to be like, oh, you know, it's like the rules, the guidelines, you know. But if we just are tender and, oh, don't worry about it, that's fine. We have no accountability. You know, we don't have the structure. So we need the structure mm-hmm. and tenderness. Over time. It's not just immediate. And then if you add a tribe that supports you and is on your journey with you, all those four, you know, the truth, tenderness, time, in the context of a tribe brings about transformation. So it does take time.
Yeah. So how did you go from 1 to 10?
So I had baby number one, and it's like, I loved having siblings. You know, I was closer to my siblings than to my parents. So it was like and cousins, lots of cousins, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it was like, oh, she needs a little sister. So we had a little sister. And then we went to my 10-year reunion, and I got pregnant. And in my 9th month, I found out that they were twins. So I went from 2 to 4.
What?
Yeah. Week 37 or 36. So it's like, you're having twins. It's like,
So when did we miss this?
Yeah, it was just crazy. It was crazy. Yeah. It was the coolest surprise ever, because there was no time for bed rest, none of that. You know, my body held on to those babies. I would have gone 40 weeks. They induced me at 39. So.
Wow. That's unusual for twins.
Yeah. So then California had this earthquake. And I remember there was this article in the paper about the babies are born when there's tragedy. And I was thinking, who's going to take their clothes off after an earthquake? Well, I guess we did. And so I had baby number 5. So I have 5 girls. I had 5 girls. I had made a deal with God. Look, I'm going to have all these kids, but I want them all done by the time I'm 30. That was my deal. So child number 5's birthday is November 21st, and mine's November 25th. So I thought, okay, ta-da, I had my 5. And then one day I was watching my husband work outside, and he's so hands-on. He's very talented. He's very gifted. And I was just imagining a little boy running after him. Like, gosh, boys would be blessed to have a father like that. So I thought, So we had a boy. And then I thought, he needs a brother. So we had another boy. And then, you know, came the little girls, and then we had a girl, and then we had our little bookend boys. So they just kept coming. I kept taking them until I thought, you know what? My body has been very good to me. The babies have been very safe. But my youngest, I delivered at 40. And so I thought, 10 is good. I like even numbers.
Yeah. That's so cool. They all have their own, you know, story in the line. So was there a lot of sibling rivalry?
I would say there's dynamics that are really special and dynamics that are more challenging. My younger 2 boys were just like bickering all the time, you know, and now all of a sudden, they just don't anymore. So my identical twins are very different. Their relationship is very different to their, you know, girls. And so just seeing that is the dynamic is very different. I think they could live anywhere, and just as long as they had each other, they'd be good. But it's also really a lot of olders and youngers that are very close. Like my older son, my older son, youngest daughter, oldest daughters, younger ones, how they go grab sushi with each other. Hey, you want to grab some coffee? Or it's just very sweet to see these combinations.
Yeah.
They take care of each other. One of my sons is has been on a ship for like 240 days or something like that. And he introduced his siblings to a game that's really popular right now. And so he's over there off the coast of San Diego on a ship, and my kids are playing the game with him. It's just so
cute. Oh, that's so cool.
Very sweet.
So how old are they now?
The oldest is 30 and the youngest is 15.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. So what other ways have you grown, or like what advice do you have to share for other moms that are coming from a place of not having all the tools within themselves?
I mean, I've learned so many things. Like I mentioned, with my daughter with the mental illness, I have a son who is on the autism spectrum and suffered severe depression and even suicidality. We were able to find the note, and his siblings kind of knew where he was going to try to end his life. So we've had a lot of really big issues, you know, that we've had to deal with and face. But I think, you know, going back to those ingredients is that we really need that. We really need the support because you're, you know, we learn something in life and then we need to unlearn it if it's unhealthy. Yeah. And then we need to relearn something different. And so that takes time and we need the support and the tools, but the tools come from connection. You know, it's mm-hmm. not just a thing. I always tell moms that you are the number one tool for growth because I have 10 kids. There's not a bunch of tools that are going to work necessarily, but it's me. It's how I present myself to my children. It's how I connect to them in the moment, especially when they're easily triggered or mental illness or anything like that. It really comes down to our children to feel seen, soothed when they need it, and to feel safe and secure. And as a mom, mm-hmm. I can morph and, you know, do what I need to do to become that for them in those given moments, but especially in times when they're struggling.
Right. Yeah, I think that mindset shift is huge, to know that you don't have to have 30 different or like 10 different toolkits, one for each kid, and have all of these elaborate things within them that you have to learn and master and, you know, take on. But really, if you know that it's the tool is you, that's a game changer.
Because it's not about what you do. It's about who you become in the moment. Because when yeah. we exchange, we have micro moments of connection. And so what am I going to do in those moments? You know, when we're uncomfortable, we cross our arms, we tense up. But when we're relaxed, we open up and relax. And so that's what I want for my kids. My favorite words in life is, where's mom? When they walk through the door, I know they're looking for me because they want advice or they want support or they just want to talk. Or mm-hmm. the younger ones are like, hey, mom, where are you going today? Because they just want to hang out, you know. And so if I'm difficult, I'm challenging, if I'm closed off, they're not going to be asking me, where's mom, unless they want something or need something. But I want right. to be more relational.
Yeah. That's so such a stark contrast from the way that you grew up to the way that you're trying to show up now. So it really does take a transformation to get to that place. But it starts with identifying that that's the end goal, right?
Yes. I always tell moms that. It's like we kind of like dream, like, what is it that you want? What is the end goal? And actually, I was taught that before I had my first child. So when things were really difficult with her and I couldn't console her in the way I wanted to, I just kept thinking about the end goal. Okay, what is it? Don't give up. Whether we're mm-hmm. writing a book or building a business or creating anything, I've always been that, like I always say, I need the carrot dangling. I always look mm-hmm. for the goals, dreams, the hopes, to keep me on course. And not to give up.
Mm-hmm.
Never to disqualify myself, or because we're growing. You know, I always think of, you know, I have had 10 children. They're all different. Just like all of us have different children. But when I had child number one, I didn't know what it was to have a cuddly little girl. Then I didn't know what it was like to be a mom of twins. How would I know? Right. Then I didn't know how to be a mom of five. Then I didn't know I had a boy. That was the first time. Then I had a son on the spectrum, and on it goes. So for us to expect perfection from ourselves, there's so many things that still haven't happened. None of my kids are married. So I don't know what it's like to be a mother-in-law or to be a grandma. So for us to grace ourselves that we're all growing and evolving, and to not expect that we would know, we just connect. Mm-hmm. We just connect in the moment and the rest starts to flow. And
yeah,
you don't have to have all the answers or know. It's a journey. It's a journey.
Yes.
Show up for the journey. Yeah.
Yes. And in the journey, we can learn so much and we take on more tools and we feel more confident because of just that track record and our experience with them.
Right.
But yeah, you don't get to show up to parenting with all of your knowledge and ready to disperse it all with this level of awakening and enlightenment. That is not the way that it goes.
You will be gravely disappointed if that's what you think.
Right, right. And I think we are, because we don't know what to expect a lot of times, but thankfully, our kids teach us to be humble and to be ready for change and to learn and grow. And that's a beautiful journey. It is. But we have to be okay with knowing that we're not going to feel like we have it all figured out. And then that's not really the goal. The goal is connection and being able to be authentically ourselves enough that our kids do want to be drawn and attracted to that relationship and have that really secure attachment. That's so critical for their development and and for them to be well adjusted and have all of the other relationships after that first love be healthy and happy. It does all start and end with us. Kind of a big deal.
It is a big deal. For supports on along the way.
Right. So tell us more about what you've created with Mom Connections.
Okay. So I'm a psychotherapist, and what I realize is that there's the women who sit across from me oftentimes would go home and not have a tribe. So that bothered me. And then also, I can practice in Southern California, but I couldn't help women outside. So I transitioned to coaching. I actually do both. And so I created a website, and that's not what I meant to say. I created a Facebook group called Mom Connections Remothering Tribe. And there I do lives and support women. And so we could talk about the things that are difficult. And so just kind of a lot of education. I love science. I love, peer-reviewed articles, and I'll just kind of share what some of the research is. And then just coaching individually and as a group also, because I just want us to grow, just have a movement of really supporting moms and having better families make better everything, better leaders, better everything.
Yeah, I love that. Well, thank you for doing that work and for pouring those resources and education into those moms who are the most influential women in their kids' lives. They, I'm sure, soak it up and are just so appreciative for all the love and care that you can pour into it, because I can see that that's your passion. So how can moms connect with you? Where should they find you?
I have my website and my Facebook page are the same, Mom Connections or momconnections.com. If they wanted to join my tribe, my Facebook group, it's Mom Connections Remothering Tribe. And there I am.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'll link all that stuff in the show notes. But then I always have to end every episode with the same question for everybody, which is, how are you the mom that your kids need?
I think it goes back to trying to be the expert of my own children and trusting that I intuitively know them very well, not perfectly, and not, because everybody's their own person and they share what they want to share. But I just trust that I have been available. I have been curious about who they are. And I think that's just a really big piece, and who are they becoming. So I'm just always making mental notes about who they were, who they're becoming, where they're going. And I want to be a part of their support wherever that journey leads them.
That's lovely. Well, they are lucky to have you.
Thank
you so much for your time today and for sharing your story. I'm sure that is something that a lot of moms can relate to. So we just appreciate your time so much.
I appreciate it, Danielle. Thank you.
Remember, you are on the bridge. You get to decide what you bring into your parenting and how you show up. The tools, the resources, the support are all here for you. You get to choose. It's a beautiful time to be a mom. Always remember the worth of your work. If you enjoyed this episode, leave a review on Apple Podcasts so more moms can find it. Thanks for coming on this journey with me. I believe in you, and I'm cheering you on.